Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is WebSphere Extreme Scale 8.6 Liberty, Connectivity, and Serviceability. Today's presenters are Robert Outlaw, Eli Lippert, and Srini Vadlamudi. Robert is the technical lead for the WebSphere Extended Deployment, later Virtual Enterprise and Extreme Scale Level 2 support team. He has over 10 years' experience working with WebSphere family technologies. Srini is currently working as a Level 2 support engineer in WebSphere Extended Deployment, supporting WebSphere Extreme Scale, DataPower XC10 Appliance, WVE, and Compute Grid products. Eli is a member of the WebSphere Extended Deployment L2 support team since 2011. In this capacity, he is responsible for client problem resolution, focusing on the WebSphere Extended Deployment suite of products, WebSphere Extreme Scale XC10 appliances, WebSphere Virtual Enterprise Intelligent Management, and WebSphere Compute Grid. In this role, he ensures customer satisfaction is consistently met and strives not only to resolve current product issues, but to drive overall product quality. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Robert. Robert, you may begin.
Thank you. I will be starting on slide 2. So today's agenda, going back to the topic of Liberty, connectivity, and serviceability. The first item that we'll be discussing is we'll be going over an overview of WebSphere Extreme Scale and its integration with the WebSphere Liberty profile. We have new features when WebSphere Extreme Scale 8.6 that integrate with the new WebSphere Liberty profile that was introduced in WebSphere Application Server 8.5. So we'll be discussing at a high level what is now available with the new lightweight portable WebSphere Liberty technology. The second item is enterprise data grids. There has been a significant amount of work put into WebSphere Extreme Scale 8.6 to enhance the connectivity features of WebSphere Extreme Scale to allow it to operate in environments where it previously couldn't, and also to extend itself in the grid and the way the grid is deployed in ways that were not available in previous releases. Finally, we'll be discussing the serviceability features that are new in WebSphere Extreme Scale 8.6. There are a variety of technologies that we've introduced to make using and administering the product easier and more effective for our customers. Let's move to slide 3. And I'll be handing this over to Eli Lippert for him to discuss the WebSphere Liberty profile, WebSphere Extreme Scale 8.6 integration.
Thank you very much, Robert. This part of the presentation will focus on Extreme Scale's interaction with the Liberty profile. While this presentation is not intended to be a deep dive on the Liberty profile itself, we must cover some of the basics of the Liberty profile to have a general understanding of the design and implementation of Liberty to make Liberty beneficial to exploit from an Extreme Scale perspective. At the basics, Liberty is a new lightweight kernel which supports a subset of the traditional WebSphere application server modules. In conjunction with Liberty's more robust exploitation of OSGI, this allows a user to add or remove as many features as they would like dynamically while ensuring those features used are the same as traditional WAS server install, thereby keeping the Liberty environment very lightweight and flexible, but at the same time preserving the ability to replicate a traditional WAS install environment. Next slide, slide 4, please. The Liberty profile basis of design was to create a dynamic and easily configurable development environment. The basic idea is to allow developers to have a fast, easy-to-configure server on which to develop and test only modules needed for the specific task. This eliminates much of the overhead of system administration or development environments that were required with traditional WAS. In the past, traditional WAS required that development environments be slightly scaled-down copies of production environments, despite being used solely for development. With the advent of Liberty, less resources can be spent on creating, configuring, and maintaining development environments. This is an especially nice feature for extreme-scale development environments, as extreme-scale development environments can be quite large. As previously mentioned, the Liberty profile is easily configurable. This is done via the server XML. The desired features for the server runtime just need to be added or removed from the server XML. The Liberty profile will then read the changes when the server XML is saved. As the server configuration is altered, the server's runtime will be dynamically changed by stopping or starting the features. This is done via an OSGI implementation, which means the changes can be made without requiring a server restart, even though on Liberty, restarting the server only takes a few seconds. This allows a developer to add only the features they require to minimize the overhead and simplify the environment. However, since the Liberty profile uses many of the same features packaged in a traditional WAS install, any development within a Liberty environment should easily port to a traditional WAS install, thereby making the transition from development to production much more seamless. While so far the discussion has focused on Liberty in a development capacity, this does not mean the Liberty profile cannot be used as a production server. Liberty is a fully supported, production-ready server. However, since production environments are normally designed to have a small amount of changes over time, development environments would generally benefit more from Liberty's dynamic ability. It should also be noted that Liberty for developers and ExtremeScale 8.6 for developers on Liberty are free and small downloads. Thus, with the fast download and easy to configure nature of Liberty, a basic WXS development environment on Liberty can be set up in a matter of minutes for no cost. Next slide. Slide 5, please. The next segment of the discussion will focus on some of the ExtremeScale features which are available on Liberty. While ExtremeScale first developed Liberty features in ExtremeScale 8.5 release, the number of ExtremeScale features for Liberty has greatly increased in 8.6. These new features help to round out the ExtremeScale on Liberty portfolio by giving users access on Liberty to a much larger part of the product. We will start with the server feature, which provides the capability for running the ExtremeScale catalog and container on Liberty. These processes make up the backbone of an ExtremeScale environment. The catalog servers are responsible for grid management and routing, while the containers are where the actual data are stored in the grid. The client feature allows the other major part of ExtremeScale, that being the client, to run in a Liberty profile. The ExtremeScale client is responsible for the interaction between the ExtremeScale capable applications and the server-side grid itself. Essentially, the client is used to leverage the ExtremeScale APIs to perform standard CRUD, create, read, update, and delete operations on the grid, as well as queries and other functions. The web app feature replaces the now deprecated web feature from ExtremeScale 8.5. This feature provides the capability to replicate HTTP session data from applications running on Liberty to an ExtremeScale grid. This allows session data to be retrieved by the user on another JVM in case of failure on the original JVM. This feature is the HTTP session replication client only module. Next slide, slide 6, please. We now move on to the ExtremeScale features, which are new in 8.6. The web grid feature provides the capability of starting containers that are used for storing HTTP session data. The web grid feature contains a full install, meaning both the client and server features for HTTP session replication, meaning that the web grid feature includes all functionality provided in the web app feature. However, in most scenarios, it will be desired to have the server and client reside on different Liberty servers. The Liberty dynamic cache feature is new in 8.6. The feature provides the ability for Extreme Scale running on Liberty to be the dynamic cache provider for applications running in a traditional WAS install and using the WAS Dynacache. The JPA feature is new in 8.6. The feature provides the use of the Java Persistence API for Extreme Scale running on Liberty. JPA allows user applications to leverage JPA when creating a loader. This will allow user applications to preload a grid from a database or allow the loader to store data to and from the database as necessary using the JPA APIs, all on the Liberty profile. Lastly, this brings us to the new REST feature in ExtremeScale 8.6. This feature provides the use of the Representational State Transfer, or REST Gateway, to access simple data grids that are hosted by the Liberty profile. The REST Gateway allows non-Java environments, such as XI50 or a .NET application, to access ExtremeScale simple data grids. The REST Gateway can also be used to access the grid from a JVM that is not able to use the Object Map API, such as those not using IBM Orb. Next slide, slide 7. In this segment, we will discuss some of the basic install and configuration of ExtremeScale in the Liberty profile. There are a few different methods to install ExtremeScale for Liberty. When installing a traditional WAS 8.5, an option is given to install Liberty. Once selected, Liberty will now be installed in the WASHome/WLP directory. When ExtremeScale 8.6 is installed on WAS 8.5 with Liberty, the ExtremeScale for Liberty features and files will automatically be installed into the WASHome/WLP directory. Installing the developers' versions are even easier. The WLP developers jar and the WXS WLP jar just need to be downloaded for free from IBM websites. Running the Java jar command on the respective jars will install each product. Just be sure to install ExtremeScale into the same location as WLP. Next slide, slide 8, please. We discussed the WXS features previously. To implement a WXS feature or features, simply add the desired feature as an attribute to the features element of the WLP server XML. To modify the properties for ExtremeScale features, which have modifiable attributes, create the XS feature name element in the server XML. For example, to pass in attributes for a container or catalog server, use the XS server element. For REST, use the XS REST. And for HTTP session, use XS web app or XS web app. XS web app is used for both the web grid and web app features. Due to Liberty's restrictions on how properties are defined, not all ExtremeScale properties can be defined as attributes in the XS feature configuration element. Properties such as these must be passed in via a server.props file on the server props attribute in the XS feature name configuration element. Examples of these properties are foreign domain or the security configuration properties. When configuring the XS grid, the basic grid configuration files are the object grid deployment XML and the object grid XML. These must be placed in the grids directory for the container. The grids directory is a monitor directory. An update to the XMLs in the directory causes dynamic changes to the containers, such as an automatic restart or stop to load the grid changes. Next slide, slide 9, please. My final section of the presentation is some basic troubleshooting. The Liberty logs are very clean and straightforward. These should be checked for basic troubleshooting, especially any errors when starting the ExtremeScale environment, as several configuration problems will have verbose messages. If a problem requires more detailed traces, the logging and tracing settings must be adjusted. The logs and trace settings are controlled via the logging element and the libertyserver.xml file. These cannot be specified in the extreme scale server properties file or as an XS feature element. If IBM assistance is necessary, IBM support can be contacted for extreme scale 8.6 on Liberty. However, it should be noted that the free extreme scale 8.6 developers version has limited support via the extreme scale form. When contacting IBM support for extreme scale 8.6 on Liberty, we would need to start with a description of the problem, the Liberty server XML, any server.properties file, the grids directory, and of course the logs from each WXS server involved in the configuration. Next slide, slide 10. Finally, here are a few known issues with extreme scale on Liberty. When trying to use the web app or web grid features on extreme scale 8.6.01 on WLP 8.5.01, the XS Web Common bundle is missing. The iFix for PM 82844 needs to be applied to resolve this issue. Starting in WLP 8.5.02, WLP no longer monitors the slash dev directory where the WXS client bundle is installed. Thus, the WXS client bundle must be copied from the WLP slash dev directory to the WLP slash lib directory to use the client features. We'll be correcting this behavior in a future fix pack of extreme scale. I'll now hand the presentation over to Robert Outlaw, who will discuss Extreme I.O. Robert, the floor is now yours.
Thank you, Eli. So we've added some pretty dramatic new infrastructure to Extreme Scale to better leverage larger and more diverse environments in 8.6. The highlight and banner feature name is the Enterprise Data Grid. What Enterprise Data Grids do is they allow the use of the exact same cache data across different application environments. Previously, WebSphere Extreme Scale has only supported customers running with Java and with the IBM Orb in their environment. With Enterprise Data Grids, we're providing an infrastructure where customers can implement both the Java and .NET application environments that are natively supported in their code. While these two environments are the only two that are currently supported, there is an open-ended issue for additional environments to be added in later releases. Data is stored into the Extreme Scale Grid now in a universal format instead of a specifically serialized manner such as was done before. This allows the grid to return data to clients in either operating language environments. The highlight here is that previously we would store objects into the grid as a, you know, Java serialized objects, and then we would reread them and send them back when they were retrieved and perform that deserialization. But either way, when they were traversing across the line and being stored into the grid, you had serialized Java objects. So if you had a different kind of a client, such as a .NET client, it would not be able to use that. Now with this universal format, we are allowing, you know, multiple environments to be able to interact with this data, as well as getting some advantages, which I will discuss in a little bit. Two new features have been added that allow this Enterprise Data Grid functionality to work. The first is Extreme I.O., which is a cross-platform transport protocol which replaces the use of the Java Object Request Broker for communication between Extreme Scale processes. Currently, users of Extreme Scale must use the Java Orb in order to provide communication from a Extreme Scale client talking back to the grid, or between the Extreme Scale catalog server and container servers. Now we have this new protocol, which is lightweight and designed for caching operations instead of the previous Java request broker support. Again, we also have this extreme data format, which is what I was referring to as this universal format where objects can be serialized into the grid in a cross-platform, cross-development environment manner. It's important to note that these features do not preclude customers from using the previous functionality with ExtremeScale in 8.6. Customers that want to stick with what they had previously and what they or are more comfortable with running with a purely Java and ORB environment will be able to do so as well. So anyone who's moving to 8.6 that does not want to include and incorporating these features in their migration path will not need to make any of these changes. You will literally be able to upgrade without any consideration of these features. Moving on to slide 12. ExtremeIO is a replacement for the use of the Java Object Request Broker from previous versions of WebSphere ExtremeScale. The customized transport is specifically designed for data caching operations and replaces the general-purpose ORB communication protocols, which were originally created and designed for use with the Java remote method invocation and CORBA compatibility in mind. Use of the ExtremeIO communication protocol from a troubleshooting and configuration perspective removes a lot of the configuration-dependent variables that the use of the Java ORB has had in previous releases. Many customers who have used the WebSphere ExtremeScale in previous releases have had to perform specific ORB tuning in order to get the kind of performance or to work around issues before. XIO provides a default recommended min-max number of networking worker threads by default, so we should not need the kind of in-depth tuning that is required for ORB for the ORB configuration in an ExtremeScale 8.6 data grid environment using and leveraging ExtremeIO. It also provides a configurable transport layer timeout that is also specific to XIO and will not clash with other operations in WebSphere that may use the Java ORB. Of course, in a WebSphere environment, the Java ORB is used for potentially a number of things, including enterprise Java bean activity and whatnot. So you do not have that luxury of isolation for some of the for those activities versus ExtremeScale activities. When you are customizing and working with ExtremeIO, that protocol will only be used for data caching operations within ExtremeScale. So you can make configuration changes to XIO that will be guaranteed not to impact other applications and other parts of your WebSphere environment. Even if you're using a purely Java-based environment now, say you're migrating from previous releases of ExtremeScale to 8.6, you should take a strong consideration to using XIO in your implementation or your migration pattern. The isolation and performance benefits that XIO has over the Java ORB are significant, and the amount of problems that you will run into with XIO should be much less than the number of issues that you could potentially encounter when working with the Java Object Request Broker. Slide 13, please. Migrating to XIO or implementing XIO is very simple. Start your standalone catalog servers with the start XS server instead of the start OG server script. Most customers do use a wrapper script that calls start OG server under the covers currently right now, after setting up appropriate environment variables and class paths. To migrate to XIO, the first step will be to adjust those scripts to call and start this start XS server script instead of the start OG server script. This is for standalone catalog servers. Customers using WAS-managed or WebSphere-managed catalog servers have a checkbox, Enable IBM ExtremeIO Communication in the WebSphere Admin Console under the Catalog Service Domain definition for the Catalog Service Domain where the catalogs are running. You would literally just need to ensure that that checkbox is checked and then restart the appropriate catalog servers for them to come up using the XIO protocol. Container servers will when they perform their discovery with the catalog servers they're associated with, will essentially self-discover that the catalogs are configured to use XIO and will automatically communicate with the servers using that transport type. No explicit configuration changes are needed on your containers to implement ExtremeIO. By configuring Extreme.io in your environment, you also free up the use and make it available to use WebSphere Extreme Memory, which was available in the previous release in 8.5, to manage container memory instead of the Java heap. So you will use native memory instead of the managed Java heap. So what this frees you is it frees you from relying on Java garbage collection and Java garbage collection algorithms such as GenCon for memory management. So in the number of operations that can be performed on a caching environment are very limited, right? We talk about CRUD a lot, the create, retrieve, update, and delete operations. It's very simple to perform memory management when the number of operations being placed into the memory itself are that confined. So with Extreme Memory, we have this ability to have a more efficient means of managing the memory being used than the general-purpose Java garbage collection, which is intended to be able to mark and delete allocated and freed up objects during runtime. And what we've found is that in performance testing is that Extreme Memory can lower overall grid response times due to the fact that we are not having to deal with the kind of issues that come with using the Java garbage collection, namely GC pauses and other issues. Slide 14. So the Extreme Data Format that I was referring to earlier allows storage of objects into the grid in a language-independent manner. Both Java and .NET clients can store the same objects into the grid. Using the Extreme Data Format requires that you enable XIO and that you have your grid's copy map set mode set to copy by bytes. This is implemented by setting the copy mode field in the deployment XML to copy by bytes in the backing map elements. So when you look at your deployment XMLs for your grid, you will need to make sure that the copy by bytes flag is set in the backing map element for each of your maps for your grid. One particular feature of note in Extreme Data Format is the allowance of class evolution. This allows for class data definitions to evolve over time without affecting existing applications, while allowing newer applications to store data with the evolved classes in the same map. So what's going on here is that you may have an older version of an application, say that you originally created, that stores a object into the grid in a certain manner. You may then have a new application that wants to use that same data that the older application stored, but wants to extend the data to allow new functionality and new granularity of the data. You'll be able to deploy this newer version of the application with this newer version of the class, and then they can successfully coexist between the two versions of the application. So the Extreme Data Format will attempt to use class evolution mechanism when the class names match and the field names do not have conflicts in types. So one important consideration is to ensure that any class members that you have defined are, still between the two that are common between the two classes, retain their types between the two. Applications that add new fields should take into account that data added by the older application into the grid will not have those fields. So if you have a field in your new application, that field may not be provided with valid data when you're accessing it with your new version of the app, if that data was inserted into the grid by the older version. Now, Extreme Data Format will provide a default value for the language that's being used, but it should not be considered usable for application logic purposes. If an entry from the newer version of the class is removed from the grid and replaced by an entry from the older evolution, say, for an example, we have an entry that is retrieved by the older version of the application that was inserted by the newer one, and then the newer version has been evicted from the grid due to eviction policy, then the insertion of the data from the older version later on, you can have field data that can be lost. So that is a consideration in, that you need to take into account. However, simple updates to existing grid objects from the older evolution will be merged. So if you have the situation where your older application is accessing data into the grid that was inserted by the newer version, that and then, you know, then performs an update of that data, you will not see that the newer fields will be removed or changed. The data and the will be intelligently merged into the grid entry. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague Srini for discussion of the WebSphere Extreme Scale 8.6 serviceability features.
Thanks, Robert. Can we move to slide 15, please? So on slide 15, I listed a couple of the new serviceability features that we incorporated in version 8.6. The first one is the pop-up mechanism or the alert mechanism in the message center that can be accessed through the monitoring console. The query data grid console features where you can clear an entire map or you can clear individual values. We have a couple of new arguments that you can pass to XSCMD to monitor your replication state. We also have a couple of two useful commands to detect your catalog placement function. Slide 16, please. So as a extreme scale admin, you are responsible for monitoring quite a few number of JVMs in your entire grid. And you would want to check on the health of the grid. So the message center can be very useful just having a dashboard view of particular changes that are happening in your entire domain. That includes the catalog servers and also the container JVMs. So the message center is being developed to make it very user-friendly to look at various alerts that come into the monitoring system. So quite a few events trigger the alerts to be notified. Popular ones are the server start and the stop events. And also if your catalog service has quorum enabled, it can display the quorum loss or the quorum rejoin or the regaining of the quorum status. You can also see the core group membership changes, which is quite useful. So the message alerts are available in two variants. One is through the monitoring console, or if you prefer the XSCMD, you can also have a couple of commands to display the same information. Slide 17. Here is an illustration of the message center from the monitoring console. You can see server 0. For a catalog domain, which is named D1, you can see the server startup. You can also see the core group membership change. This is presented just to illustrate how it looks like from the monitoring console. Moving on to slide 18. Here is a command or argument that you can pass to XSCMD. It's called show notification history. It actually takes the catalog endpoint. So you run XSCMD with a -c for command, and then the command name with a catalog endpoint. It primarily displays the similar info that you saw in the previous slide, the monitoring console. Moving on to slide 19. If you want to listen in, it's almost like tailing a log file rather than taking just-in-time snapshot. You can do that too with this particular command where you listen for notifications, the output keeps running on your console until you kind of terminate the command. So you run listen for notifications with a catalog endpoint, and then you can see similar messages where core group membership changed, the server started, quorum enabled, quorum disabled, type of messages. Slide 20. We have this query data grid console where we have these new features. One is clearing the map, the entire map, and you can use regular expressions to kind of granularly select particular key values. So for the key values that are too long to fit into your table, you can particularly click a specific key that you would like to clear the values for. And if the key has already been removed from the grid, like one of the popular removals is through the evictors. So then if you click the link, then it displays a null as a value. You can always refresh the existing table to get the values from the grid. I put in a couple of phrase strings that might be useful to kind of know this particular feature. One is the XSA data management dot query grid equals to all equals to enabled. Slide 21, please. Here is a screenshot of how it looks like from the console. It shows a tabular view having the key value. You can click on clear map to clear the entire contents of the map, or you can selectively choose particular keys that you would like to invalidate. Slide 22, please. Moving on to the next feature in our serviceability, we enhanced the monitoring capability of our replication. So as a extreme scale deployer or administrator, you would like to check on a periodical basis as to what the state of your replication is between your primary and the replicas, just to make sure that your containers are not falling too far behind. It's good to know how your replication state at any given point is. It's almost like checking your incoming queue versus your outbound queue, just so that there is no buildup of the requests that are waiting to be replicated. Slide 23. Here is a command that you can run. It's show replication state, self-explanatory, to which actually shows the replication state. It displays your containers and your outstanding revisions, outstanding inbound revisions, and also outstanding outbound revisions. It's very useful command to display the replication state. Similarly, if you have multiple domains set up and configured to do the multi-master replication, the MMR topology, we have a similar command, which I will show in the next slide. Slide 24, here is the command for the inter-domain replication between domain A and domain B, if you have two domains. Show domain replication state. It displays your domains and similar output by containers, outstanding inbound and outstanding outbound. Slide 25, please. The last valuable serviceability feature that we incorporated is to monitor the shard placement in the containers by the catalog server service. Should there be any problems that are encountered during the shard placement where there are some container JVMs that are failing due to some DNS resolution or any configuration errors, those container JVMs will be disabled so that the placement wouldn't occur to those container JVMs. So we have a couple of new commands that are added to XSCMD, which will allow you to display your disabled containers. And once you rectified whatever the configuration issue, you can re-enable them so that the placement can reoccur. So moving to slide 26, the first command is list disabled containers. It displays a table of the containers that have been disabled from the placement operation. You can pass the server name of the container JVM to re-enable so that the placement can be restarted. Slide 27, please. So that covers the four serviceability features that were incorporated in version 8.6 of WebSphere Extreme Scale. In summary, today, between Eli, Robert, and myself, we covered these three important topics, starting with the Extreme Scale integration with Liberty Profile, and Robert covered the enterprise data grids with Extreme IO and the Extreme data format, and I concluded by presenting on the serviceability features that went into version 8.6. Now I hand over to David Long to take it over.
Thank you, Robert, Rini, and Eli for a great presentation. Slide number 28 also lists some additional WebSphere product resources that we hope you would find useful. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Catherine, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We will now begin our formal question and answer session. If you would like to ask your question, please unmute your phone, press star 1. Only record your first and last name. And we do have a question coming through. One moment. The first question is coming from Victor. Sean, your line is open.
Hi, this is Victor. I'm from also from IBM. I'm familiar with the version 7 and the 6.1 and those versions of WASP. But for this version 8.6, just help me understand. You mentioned a few times saying there's a free download for the profile and the libraries. But we still, even for the developers, still need a full license, WebSphere 8.6, to be able to use those profile and libraries. Is that correct?
This is Eli. The free downloads should be out there, and they should be free. They can just be found via the web.
Oh, sorry. So that's the whole package, including the WASP binary. Is that right?
No, that is for WLP only, the Liberty Profile. It does not include the traditional WAS install. you're right if you're asking, does a traditional WAS install need a full license? Absolutely, yes.
Yes, but if I need, if I want, because this Liberty Profile is really new to me, so if the if I want only use the Liberty Profile, do I need to pay a license for some kind of WAS binary so I can download it and then use the Liberty Profile? Or is that if I want, or I just can just download some kind of a free WAS binary for Liberty Profile only?
The Liberty Profile is available for free on the web, yes.
Yeah, so help me understand that the profile is really just like a profile, because we know that there's a command called manage profile, create a profile, right?
No, this is completely different than that. The Liberty Profile is its own standalone server kernel, and it is called the profile. When you download the Liberty jar, you will have a running Liberty server.
Oh, okay. And that's only like a 40 meg? I remember one party says 40 meg, and another party is saying there are some libraries. So roughly how big is that? Just curious.
It's about 40 meg, unless they've increased it, but it shouldn't be over 60 meg.
And it's already runnable?
Yes, it's available on the web, yes.
Yeah, sorry, and it's included the JVM. Actually, I can run it without anything else, without downloading any other WAS component. I can just run that 60 meg.
Yes, you just need to download the profile.
Okay. Oh, well, a bit of a surprise, because usually the old WAS is like at least several gig. Okay, good to know. Thanks.
Yes.
Once again, if you do have a question, you may press star 1 on your phone. The next question is coming from Mohan Kohli. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for a great presentation. I have a question on the serviceability features that Srini presented. So the UI that we have, Srini presented for monitoring, you know, that really is a great improvement over the monitoring features that we have today. So is the UI in itself, is it only available for WAS managed WXS grids, or is that a standalone component that I can just install, configure it to query against a standalone grid, and, you know, query a standalone grid?
It is available in the standalone grid also. It is one of the features that you select when you are installing the standalone install. It is console.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know, I would just need to select the appropriate parameters or flags when I install, and they can still, you know, install it even with a standalone. All right, thanks. And one other follow-up question. So is there a next iteration of data power appliances that is based off of WXS 8.6? You know, the last I know of is XC10, which is a version 7.1 based appliance. So is there a newer appliance that is off of 8.6?
This is Robert speaking. The ExtremeScale XC10 family will continue to be updated with features from ExtremeScale 8.6 going forward. We don't have any time frame or specifics as to what that is, but the two products are definitely interconnected in their support. And as we go forward in the future, you know, future firmwares of the XC10 appliance will incorporate technologies in 8.6 in those releases. But we, you know, obviously aren't going to, you know, talk about any, you know, definite specifics thereof.
All right, thank you.
And I just as another point, if there's a specific feature that is included in WebSphere ExtremeScale 8.5 or 8.6 that you would like to see in XC10 that's not available, you can always go to DeveloperWorks and make a request for feature enhancement to our products. Those are promptly reviewed by our development teams to be incorporated in our releases. And we definitely, on these two products especially, do take care of those RFEs, and they are very relevant. So customers that, you know, do make these requests, rest assured that, you know, this is something that is very productive for you to do if you want a feature from ExtremeScale 8 into XE10. That's the best way to do it.
Thank you.
No further questions at this time.
We have one question from the web meeting.
Yes, there's a few questions in the group chat.
Okay.
The first one is, can we deploy WXS 8.6 on WLP 8.5?
Yes.
Okay. The next question has to do with, it says, tried to install WX Liberty Profile V8.6 from Eclipse Marketplace and got an error. And because apparently a required item was missing, it looks like it requires org.eclipsejet111, but it could not be found. Any idea?
So that's a little beyond the scope of this presentation, as I was kind of troubleshooting a specific issue.
Right.
But I would definitely check and make sure that both the Liberty Profile Developer Tools and the ExtremeScale Liberty Profile Developer Tools have been installed first. And then if there's any other issues, I would pursue that in the WXS forum.
Okay. And then another question is, someone's asking, what is REST API and the purpose of it?
So, Eli, do you want to cover that, or do you want me to talk about that?
I can discuss it because I discussed it.
Go for it.
In the presentation. So the REST API is a way for non-Java clients to access the data grid. So you can, it's use HTTP protocol to access the data grid, thereby eliminating the necessity for the object map API to be used. So appliances like the XI50 or non-Java clients like your .NET clients can access the grid.
Right, and you know, from your code or from your application, it's really just a matter of, you know, properly constructing a URL, an HTTP URL, and sending it to the REST gateway, and you'll get a response, and that response is meaningful, you know, whether it completed or not, and the action will be taken on the grid itself to perform the update or the create or the delete.
Thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Robert, Eli, and Srini, for presenting today.
Thanks.
This will conclude today's conference. All parties may disconnect.